walk across the courtyard towards the library. I can hear the insects buzzing the leaves beneath my feet.
Happy April, Kodiak. This is Athenia from the Kodiak Public Library Association presenting tonight's show of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales. Now that it's lighter out and spring has officially arrived, we're starting to think about gardening around here, and we've brought Stacy Studebaker on our show to talk to us about her books, Hey Bear, Ho Bear, and Octopus in the Outhouse, as well as her Wildflowers book and the upcoming workshop that she's doing on April 29th at the Kodiak Public Library from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. This workshop sounds like a lot of fun. You spend the morning inside and then the afternoon outside actually walking around and getting to know the plants firsthand with Stacy and all of her wonderful experience. Should be a lot of fun if you're interested, or if you just want to learn more about another one of our lovely local town people, stick around for that interview. After that, I've brought on the show Patty Holmes and Kate Lowen of our own Kodiak Garden Club, and they're going to share with us a number of their favorite books for people that are just learning about gardening, as well as people that have been gardening for a while and want to develop some of their skills. Most of the books we're talking about today are available at your Kodiak Public Library to check out because it's a wonderful resource I always want to remind you about. We at the Kodiak Public Library Association, of course, are very proud to help support the programming and activities of the Kodiak Public Library. And as their fundraising arm, we're also very excited to be putting on this workshop with Stacy Studebaker. So we encourage you to get a copy of her book and come on down and register. Registration is mandatory for that. And lastly, on our show today, we have Katie Baxter, the Kodiak Public Library's director, interviewing Eric Lindscheid about their upcoming and previously happening Money Smart Week, which they are stretching out a little bit. They've got a workshop that happened last Saturday, the Life Sense, an exploratory lab about money for youth. It happened last Saturday, and it's also happening next Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. So if you want to figure out how to afford all of those little starter plants you're going to be wanting to buy after listening to our gardening interview, that is the way to budget for it. We have a great show, lots of wonderful interviews today, lots to learn here on Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales. So without further ado, I'm going to get right into it. Here is our own Kodiak Public Library Association's Lori Madsen with her interview with Stacy Studebaker.
It makes us do the opposite. Makes us do the opposite of what's right.
Today on our Beyond the Cover segment, we have with us Stacy Studebaker, local author, botanist, who will be presenting her Wild Plant Uses workshop Saturday, April 29th, 2017, at the Kodiak Public Library from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Welcome, Stacy.
Hi, Lori. How are you doing?
Doing great. It's great to see you. You have many environmental passions and have worn many hats in Kodiak, from high school science teacher, radio personality Lila Liverwort, member of the band Waterbound, an active Audubon Society member, children's book author, and the author of Wildflowers and Other Plants of the Kodiak Archipelago. Each new project had a life of its own. What drives your passion?
I would say I come at it from an educational standpoint. I just think it's really important for people to learn more about their surrounding natural environment.
You've written two very popular children's books, Hey Bear, Ho Bear, and Octopus in the Outhouse. What was the driving force behind those books?
Well, the Hey Bear, Ho Bear, the first children's book I wrote, was based on a song that I wrote almost 20 years ago, and the lyrics of which people kept telling me I should turn into a children's book. So I did. And also at the same time, I was a member of the Kodiak Understanding Bears Subcommittee of Fish and Game, and we were talking about better outreach projects, more educational project to teach people how to behave properly in bear country and to understand more about our wonderful bears. So I turned the lyrics of that song, extended them, and made the book. It's written in a 7-meter poem format, kind of like Robert Service-y, very rhythmic and rhymy, and makes it fun to read out loud to kids or just to read on your own because it was based originally on a song. And so I tried to integrate more lessons about proper human behavior in bear country into the lyrics so it would make it a fun educational read for kids and adults.
I've read that book to children at the museum, and many of them know the song, and they sing along. I don't even have to teach it to them. Museum. It's very popular here in Kodiak.
Great.
In that book, Kay Underwood prepared illustrations that go along with the text. Did she respond to your request, or did she make the illustrations for you?
Yes. When I decided to write the book, being a very visual person myself, I knew I needed to have a really good illustrator who understood the natural history of Kodiak. Not just any illustrator, but somebody that could get the biological details correct. Mm-hmm. And so I thought of Kay. I've known Kay for years, mm-hmm. and I've just admired and loved her artwork, all forms of it, every bit of it.
Yes.
So I contacted her and described the project, and she said definitely she'd be interested. So that's how we started, and it's been a really great collaborative relationship working on these books with her.
Yes, her illustrations really enhance the text. The books you have authored were self-published by your Sense of Place publishing company. What are some of the strengths and weaknesses of self-publishing, if there are any?
Well, first of all, to do that, you have to put your own money up front. And mm-hmm. if you have a publisher, the publisher pays for the illustration and pays for the printing and the distribution and the publicity and all that. So you have to have a nest egg and be willing to take this on as a part-time job if you want the publication to be successful. And running Sense of Place Press is a part-time, almost full-time job sometimes during the summer and spring when I get a lot of orders.
I bet it could be because you not only wrote the books, but you have to pack them up to send them away and things like that.
I get the orders. I have to contact booksellers all over the state and develop relationships with them, take their orders, and then publicize it. You know, then you have to be willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people aren't. You know, they want to write the book and that's it.
I see.
But then I also have to find somebody to print the book. And my books are a little different because they're really based on color, you know, both the mm-hmm. Wildflower book and the two children's books. So I had to find a printer that could do a really good job for a good price, for a reasonable price, so
yeah.
I didn't have to sell my house.
Right.
So I found Alaska Print Brokers, which is an outfit up in Anchorage, who works with individual authors and matches their publication with primarily Asian printers. And so they found a really good printing company called Everbest in China.
Mm-hmm.
And so my books are printed and bound in China and then shipped to the United States.
The Plant Guide to Wildflowers and of the Kodiak Archipelago is a very handy guide when you're out in the field. How was the writing experience different from writing children's books?
Well, it's completely different.
Yeah.
It's a very technical book, and you have to know what's here, and luckily I have been studying the plant diversity of the Kodiak Archipelago since 1980, mm-hmm. since I first got here, because I have a botanical background, and I wanted to know what plants were here, and so I started documenting them, and then in 2005, the Kodiak Refuge started a plant diversity project, and I worked in the refuge for 10 summers documenting and collecting plants for the refuge.
Very interesting.
So that's where it came from, and people kept saying, well, Stacy, you know all about these plants and how to identify them, but we don't have a guide. So from friends and other people that I worked with, I decided I'd better do that. So I started writing this field guide, and it took me about 5 years to put together. I did all the writing and all the photographs myself.
Mm-hmm. It's very comprehensive.
And I did the layout myself. So I had to learn. I had to go back to school and get some computer skills to do the layout and everything myself.
It takes a lot. Why do you think it's useful for people at Kodiak to have an understanding of uses for the wild plants here?
Well, first of all, people forget that plants are the life support system on planet Earth. And I don't think kids or adults get enough education in school about botany.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, everybody had botany in school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a basic science in school.
It wasn't just biology class.
No,
it was botany.
Yes. Yeah. And so I just think that people, generations and generations, have just gotten farther removed from plants. And we have an amazing diversity of flora here on Kodiak Island. We've documented almost 700 species of vascular plants here, which is amazing. It's sort of a combination of interior plants, coastal plants, and Aleutian plants,
mm-hmm.
too. And so we have a very unique, comprehensive flora here. And people need to know about it. Plus, one of the ways to lead people into the plant world is to give them practical information about mm-hmm. how to use plants. And I've always been very interested in that ever since I read Stalking the Wild Asparagus by Ewell Gibbons. Laura, you probably remember
wild
that.
Hickory nuts.
Yeah, right. Many parts are edible.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was fascinated by that in the 60s and 70s, and just kept learning more about plants wherever I went. And I worked in national parks for 10 years before I came here as a naturalist. So naturally,
yes.
I liked giving that kind of information to people on my walks and talks in the national parks. And so it just has always been a big part of my life.
You have a diverse interest in botany. I think that this workshop will be very educational for people. On April 29th, the workshop will be held at the public library. What will some of the highlights be, and what kinds of activities and lessons might be included at that workshop?
Well, in the morning will be a classroom sit-down situation. We're going to go through the plants kind of in an organized fashion. We're going to start out with spring edibles, the first things that pop up that people can eat, and then we'll move into sort of midsummer edibles, and then finally we'll get into the berries and all the uses and identification of berries. And some of the things we'll talk about, we don't have time to actually make things in class because it's just a short workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the afternoon, we will go outside to my selected locations, different habitats, and we'll learn how to identify the plants. And then we'll talk more about them, reinforcing what we learned in the morning. But some of the things we'll talk about, some of the highlights of the recipes that I share in class are things like my favorite fiddlehead and fireweed pizza.
Cool.
And nettle pesto, devil's club tea, beech green spring rolls.
Ooh.
Spruce tip beer and tea. Wild rose petal shortbread and jam.
That sounds good.
Sour dock Caesar salad.
Mm-hmm.
Elderberry flower tea infusion. And those are just a few of the things.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Is this workshop mainly for adults, or would high school students find it interesting?
The age limit is 16, so
16
you have to be 16 to class. Yeah, 16 and over.
Okay. Well, the sign-up is required, and it is going on right now at the library at the main desk. The registration fee is $15, with a portion of the proceeds benefiting Kodiak Public Library Association, which is the sponsor. Anything else you want to tell us about the workshop, Stacy?
When you register, there is an information sheet that they will hand you when you pre-register. And on the information sheet are all the things you need to bring to prepare for the class. And one of the things is a copy of my book, because I use that as my textbook.
Okay. In addition, the Braunhoff Museum is sponsoring Stacy as she comes to our History Speaks lecture on April 26th. And she will be talking about determining the floral diversity of the Kodiak Archipelago.
Primarily, I'm going to focus on my work in the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge, the 10-year project from 2005 to 2015, in the field all over the refuge, collecting plants, and how scientists work to answer that question of an area. What's the plant diversity of this area? So
mm-hmm.
how they go about doing that.
Because it is quite diverse from the north end to the south end, for example.
Yes, yes, and from sea level to the tops of the mountains.
Yes. Well, that ought to be interesting. That'll be 7 o'clock on Wednesday, April 26th, prior to the workshop that you'll be giving on April 29th. The workshop sounds very useful and interesting. Remember, that's Saturday, April 29th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Be sure and sign up now. Well, thank you, Stacy, so much for spending this time talking about your ideas and passions.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you both so much, both Lori and Stacy, for that wonderful interview. And please, everybody, remember to get out now and register before that event fills up for April 29th, the 10 to 5 workshop with Stacy Studebaker. Up next, we have our Community Roar segment, and I am particularly fond of this segment. It's where you get to rave over your amazing reads with us. Today on the show, we have Patty Holmes and Kate Lowen joining us from the Kodiak Garden Club to talk to us a little bit about some fantastic gardening books that they would recommend. Hi, Patty. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Athenia.
So why don't you give us a quick introduction to yourself and to your garden club, and then we'll jump into all the good books you've got to talk about.
Well, this is Kate Lowen, and I've lived on Kodiak for many decades, and I grew up with a dad who did a lot of flower gardening. His goal was for my mom to have flowers to arrange year-round. So I've always had an interest in flowers, and I'm still doing that here in Kodiak. And my husband is the vegetable gardener, which I also enjoy.
I'm Patty Holmes, and I've been gardening in Kodiak for more than 40 years now. And when we first came, it was way a different kind of place to garden. We started ourselves in little bitty or pots and things that we could find to plant things in. And it's changed a lot in all those years. It's pretty cool to see, because in the old days, people would have gardens that were mostly crab pots. You would go around and look at their yard, and that's what was there, crab pots or fishing gear or any kind of thing that wasn't plants. So things have changed a lot, partly, I think, because of availability. We didn't used to have a place that you could buy starts or things like that, and now you can. And I wanted to say a few words about when I started out, because we have people who are in all phases of gardening. And I think when I started, the way I found out about what to do was to look in other people's gardens, but there weren't too many. There was somebody from Fish and Game who had a nice garden, and I always went and learned from her. But the other way was to go to the library and to get out the books and read what was there. And it was kind of a lifeline, because we didn't have very much money, so we needed a way to save money. So going to the library and reading those books was wonderful for me.
And so the Garden Club has a plant sale that they do, so that's a lovely opportunity that you have given the people of Kodiak to get some of their plant starters here. And of course, we have Strawberry Fields, so there's a lot more options now for people trying to get a garden going. Have you noticed that what grows has changed here over the years as well?
Not so much. I mean, the last couple of summers, you could have gotten away with some warm weather plants, like a lot of people are growing gladiolas that bloom in the fall. This last couple of years, they've gotten away with that because you can't always count on having such a long growing season. But basically, you still need plants that are tolerant of the rain and tolerant of frost.
And it's important to really study books that have some specific things about this region, because and you can't find too many books like that. So what I did bring a book today I wanted to share, because this is Dog-Eared Reads. And it's the new Sunset Western Garden book. It's a wonderful reference, in particular because it talks specifically to our area. And it's got a plant encyclopedia included in the back and has the zones for different things marked for everything from carrots to lilacs. And it has specific ones for Alaska. And so because of that, it really is a big help. I went home and thought about what did I use the most in terms of books. And it's nice to have a reference book. And this one, the new Sunset Western Garden book, is one of the best in my view.
So can you talk to us just briefly about those zones for people that don't know?
Yes. If you look on the seed packet, or if you look in like even magazines, now garden magazines are all the rage, they'll tell you about the zones that a particular plant will grow in. And they're so general in a way that Alaska is not very well covered. And in the garden book from Sunset, they have a specific zone. They call it Alaska's mild maritime climate, which works for us. We're considered A3. That's a special zone for us. So if you go back into the back of the book and look at the plants and you find one that has A3 by it, then you'll know that's a possible one. I'm going to emphasize possible, because even though they say that that could be here, it isn't always. So that's why you want to double check with other gardeners to see what they think, because they've had probably some experience with that.
So again, that book is called The New Sunset Western Garden Book, The Ultimate Gardening Guide.
And it's put out by Sunset Magazine. They've been doing this for many years, and they've been many revisions of it over the years, and that's the most recent one. I'm not even sure what the copyright is. Let me see if I can see it here. 2012 was the last time. So probably they're working on a new one. That'd be my guess.
Uh-huh. So that's your top choice.
That's my go-to book.
Uh-huh. What about you, Kate? Do you have a go-to book?
Yeah, I have a couple, and pass them on to other people as well. I guess when you are looking for gardening books, you want to look for ones at least that start out with the northwest part of the United States, but even if you can find some specifically for Alaska, that's better, with the caveat that sometimes things that are listed in Alaska gardening books do well on the mainland and not necessarily here in Kodiak. But the Juneau Garden Club came out with a book called Gardening in Southeast Alaska, which has advice on perennials, vegetables, fruits and berries. There's a great chapter on primroses, which are prime plants for Kodiak. And it's also at our public library, and you can find it online as well. It's written by very experienced gardeners in Juneau. So that's a good one. And another one for a basic vegetable gardening, you know, A to Z, is Alaska Gardening Guide, Volume 1, and it's Alaska Vegetables for Northern Climates, and it's by Ann Roberts, Ann D. Roberts, and it's also available at the public library.
So these books, they'll give you tips on gardening and also talk to you about how to grow these plants if you have no experience at all. Are these good books for beginners or more for advanced gardeners, would you say?
I would say these are good books for beginners. They do give you advice on where a plant is happy, how to take care of it through the seasons, you know, pruning, how to improve your soil. So they are good all-around books, yes.
Mm-hmm. I've heard your husband is the expert on tomatoes, by the way. So is he using these books?
Well, he became interested in gardening organically and composting. So I would like to mention the books that he goes to. And all of these are also available at the public library. So he started reading Steve Solomon's books. Steve is from Oregon and started Territorial Seeds. And so his books are Organic Gardeners Composting, Gardening When It Counts, and Growing Vegetables West of the Cascades. And some of it is very technical. He goes into the whole science of organic gardening, but you can also go there and say, this is what I should be adding to my soil, or this is why I do this and that. Marion Owen, in her newspaper articles, is very grounded in this. And another one that he's read is Extending Your Vegetable Growing Season by Elliot Coleman, and it's the Winter Harvest Handbook. And Mr. Coleman's from Maine, so I've noticed that that is influencing vegetable gardeners here too. And yes, Walt already has tomatoes set on his plants in the living room, so he's very excited.
So do you get your seeds from the Territorial Seeds Company, or do you use other suppliers, or do you make your own from seeds?
We start a lot of our own things from seed. We use Territorial Seeds, Johnny's Selected Seeds. Ed Hume is another one who grows seeds that are good for northern climates. I'm probably forgetting somebody, but yeah.
And we don't start very many things from seeds because we don't have a suitable area. And so we often count on finding whatever starts are in town and the different places that you can get them. And for us, that works out pretty well because sometimes it takes a while for things to get very big. And so we sometimes feel it gives us a head start when, because of the situation we have where we don't have a greenhouse or anything. So that helps us.
Okay, so for people just beginning, maybe it's better to start with those little plants than even trying to go from seed. We have a pretty hard climate for baby plants around here.
Well, it depends on how hard you want to work. I mean, if you don't have very much funds, it can add up pretty fast around here because it takes a pretty big budget to get plants all the way to Kodiak and then to sell them here. So it can go either way, depending on. And the other part about seeds is that you can get some special varieties, right? Like you can control what you're growing. If around here, you have to just sort of take what you get. And if you're growing seeds, if you want to try something special, a specific sort of vegetable or flower or something, seeds are the way to go. And I know that Strawberry Fields, for one, they have some really amazing primroses, which is, like Kate said, a really fabulous plant for Kodiak. And they grow many from seed that that are unusual. If you get to growing things, at first you're just so happy to have that little carrot sprout. But later you decide, wow, you know, I want to try this specific kind because they say it's this got this long of a growing season and it's shaped like this or has this particular flavor or something. And then you can get a little more sophisticated with the seeds.
Yeah, Walt grows a Japanese cucumber that is absolutely wonderful. It tastes like watermelon. And he first got the seeds when he was visiting our son in Japan. And now we go to a store in Seattle just to get that kind of cucumber. And also we grow baby bok choy, not the big bok choy, because bok choy grows so fast here. So we also go to Oriental grocery store in Seattle to get the bok choy seeds that we want. It's been quite a search for that.
Yeah.
And it's probably too early to put anything outdoors because we're still doing a lot of freezing and thawing. Is it? Or are there some seeds you would have planted already? And if you have seeds you're starting to grow, when would you start to think about bringing your babies outside?
They always tell us to wait till the last frost, the last frost date, which they have sort of ballpark figure. But around Kodiak, it's pretty tricky to go with that. And I think lately, in the last winters we've had, but not counting the most recent one, it's been fairly mild. And so I think some of us as gardeners have pushed it a little. I know I have in putting some things out. This year looks a little bit different. It's going to be hard to say. I remember when things start thawing a little bit, I'll walk around my garden and I'll look and I'll think, oh my goodness, look at that one, made it through, and I'll be so excited. And then we have a freeze, not go out, and it's gone. So I try to not get too excited and try too early. It used to be they would say it was around June 1st, but I kind of think it's a little earlier than that now.
But only by about a week.
Oh, so we must be waiting until late in May at the least before we bring
or
them.
Or just bring them in and out. Or, if it's nice day, not windy. When you first take them out, you want to make sure that they're doing what they call hardening off. And usually Marion Owen writes a really good piece in the paper to remind people how that works. Because it's like a big shock to these plants to go from a nice warm inside the house or greenhouse environment and then be put outside because they have to deal with changes of temperature and the wind and all these things. So you need to give them a tender, loving care for a little while until they get used to it. Otherwise, they'll just go womp and you'll say, what did I do? And you didn't really do anything, but the environment did.
So that hardening off is bringing them out on a nice, calm, sunny day and then bringing them in again at night?
Yes, but well, you don't even leave them out a whole day at the beginning. You only just have them out a little while. And then you kind of increase that time a little bit longer each time until they're ready to be out there all the time. It does get to be kind of hard to do that back and forth thing. So you can use other things. They have things they call row covers, and you can even put a sheet on top of them, not laying on them, but just to keep the coldness away from them when they're there at night, if you don't want to keep taking them back and forth. But really, I think it works better. I don't know, Kate, what do you think?
Well, it's also tempting to put them in the full-blown sun when we start getting that wonderful spring weather, and that's kind of like giving them a sunburn. So you actually put them in the shade and just get them used to the ambient air temperature. That's really what you're trying to do, is get them strong enough to withstand the changes in air temperature and the changes in direct sunlight, too. So I think that that's all key to gardening here, is to really pay attention to your plants. The hard thing with doing seedlings is how much light they have. So we have a setup with big grow lights and double shelves. It's all on a timer so that from 7 to 7, they're getting this required light. But then when we harden them off, and then when you have your flowers blooming through the summertime, you still have to be paying attention to them, clipping off the dead flowers so you extend the blooming season, or, oh, this cucumber looks a little yellow, what vitamins does it need? So that's one of the keys to me, and also part of the fun is paying attention to what's happening in your garden.
And if you don't know what to do, you can look at some books, because there's a lot written, just like we've talked about, that can help people who are just trying to learn. And the other part is, do not be discouraged. Keep trying. And you just get so that, I don't know if Kate and Walt feel like this, but I know that my husband Pat and I do, that we kind of just can look at a plant at now that we've been doing this for 40 years or more, that you could just say, oh, I know what has to happen here, or you just seem to know how to plant something because it's been something you've done a lot of times. So, but we didn't start out that way. So just don't get discouraged.
So do you have any other books you want to talk to us about?
Well, I'd like to mention that the Alaska Cooperative Extension Service for the state of Alaska has published many brochures on gardening in Alaska, and they have a program called the Master Gardeners Program, and with a big binder of wonderful articles in it, and that too is at our public library, or I'm sure people can find them online and look up growing carrots in Alaska and get advice that way. And then a very basic series of books is written by a Canadian woman who started a greenhouse business in Alberta. And if you are really brand new to gardening, you could find these books online very inexpensively because they're paperbacks. They're in alphabetical order, great photos, how to care for perennials or bedding plants. She obviously knows what will be sold at garden centers and has directed her books to beginning gardeners. So look for Lois Hole, perennial favorites, bedding plant favorites, vegetable favorites if you're at a secondhand bookstore or online. And then if you're driving around, we also have Beautiful Flowers Growing Wild. So if you don't have a copy of Stacy Studebaker's Wildflowers and Other Plant Life of the Kodiak Area, you should get one and have it in your car. I mean, not only are there beautiful color pictures, but she has pages on grasses and ferns and club mosses and horsetails. It's a fabulous book.
It is a fabulous book. Stacy is also on our show today. She's talking with Lori about her upcoming workshop at the Kodiak Public Library on April 29th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So for those of you that want to get out with Stacy and firsthand experience those wildflowers, that's a great opportunity. Thanks, Kate. What about you, Patty? Do you have another book you want to talk to us about?
Well, I have one here. It's one called Blooms of Bressingham. There's Alan and Adrian Bloom are English gardeners who have been experimenting and growing things for many, many years. And their books are very good at being encyclopedic about different kinds of plants also, maybe some we haven't heard of before and might be hard for us to get. But mainly the reason I brought it is because once you get going with your gardening, you might start to decide that you want to specialize or you're interested in a particular plant. I've gone through several phases of this. For a while, I was really interested in heathers, and so I was reading everything I could about heathers, and I even got a lot of them through the mail, but they didn't really make it too well here, so that was discouraging. But I'm also interested in dwarf conifers, so I look for books about that. And as people get more experienced as gardeners, they might find primroses is another good example. You start looking for particular books that will help you grow in knowledge about whatever particular thing you're specializing in. And it kind of makes it fun. It's sort of an education you never quit doing.
And so this book is better for getting more of that in-depth knowledge about the special varieties?
Right. This particular one, Blooms of Bressingham, by Alan and Adrian Bloom. Alan is the father, Adrian's the son. Adrian Bloom has actually specialized in conifers, and so I've got some of his books about that. But this particular one I've got with me is about perennials, and people are around here, that's a good kind. I don't know if people know what perennial means. That means that you plant it and it grows and dies back in the winter, and then it comes back, hopefully, the next year. And there's kind of this saying about things that they, the first year, they just kind of sit there. They don't do much. The second year, they kind of start a little bit. And then the next year, the third year, they sort of bloom. They expand a lot. And at first, that's the other part about not getting discouraged. If you put something in the ground and it's supposed to grow here and it doesn't do much, just give it a chance, because sometimes it takes things a little longer to get going here than in Seattle.
That's actually something that my mother helped me a lot with when she helped me with my garden, is to remind me not to plant too much, because I would plant things the first year with her and then they didn't grow very much. And she said, you will be inclined to want to go back out to the garden store next year, get some more little plants and shove them in all around it. She said, don't do that. You need to give it 3 years and give it a chance, because it will eventually grow and take all that space, and you don't want to crowd your garden. What do you guys think? Is crowding your garden a pretty easy mistake to make as a beginner?
Oh, absolutely. I still do it. I think, oh yeah, I can just put one more thing in this hanging basket. It'll be beautiful. And another mistake people make is planting things in straight rows, which I've also been guilty of. So
yeah,
you know, you want to add variety and texture to your garden too.
And don't just plant one of something. It's kind of tempting because you think, oh man, there's so many neat things. But if you plant several, because it does take a while for things to get going here, then when they do start going, and I'm terrible at this because I'm always wanting to try the next new thing, but it does make a better effect in your garden if you do that. So, and you know, we've been talking specifically about plants. I was just thinking, one of the other parts of gardening is thinking of the whole landscape, the whole design of it. And some of us have pretty teeny gardens, so we just sort of plant things where we have a place to plant them. But if you think a little bit, or pay attention, I guess, to the area, the land, you know, do you have a hill? Do you have a little slope somewhere? Do you have a little place that water tends to collect? You can use those things, microclimates, they call them, sometimes to put special things that you want to try. And for me personally, I like looking at where the hills are and where the bumps are, and then using those things to plan where I have my little garden places. And they don't have to be big even. They can just be small. But think about the whole design if you can.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. The spot where all your water flows to is a good spot to pay attention to.
Yeah, there's some primroses that love that.
Yeah, and if somebody is really inspired and wants to do big scale landscaping around their yard, there is a wonderful landscape planner and designer and gifted writer from Seattle, and our public library has at least four of her books, and her name is Anne Lovejoy. And so a couple of her books that I have for midwinter solace, I would say, to look at pretty pictures and places where lots of things grow. I have her Handbook of Northwest Gardening, and another one I have is The Border in Bloom, a Northwest Garden Throughout the Seasons. And she's very conscious of how your garden can still look beautiful in the winter because of the twigs and the bark on different plants. So that's Anne Lovejoy.
Oh, that's great. So another question I wanted to ask you is, we're very lucky in Kodiak that we have access to so much seaweed, and I like to use seaweed to fertilize my garden. Is this something that all plants are happy being in soil that's had seaweed in it, or are there any tips you'd like to give people who want to use the local kelp to fertilize the procedure, or maybe some warnings about it?
It actually seems to be a very nutritious and benign additive to our gardens. Walt uses beach peat a lot, and sometimes has just grown potatoes just strictly in beach peat. I always, it's called side dressing when you put it in among your perennials. I side dress all my perennials in the fall with beach peat and seaweed. We certainly use our beach peat and our cottonwood leaves, and it's done great things in the yard.
And can you explain that? I don't really know the phrase side dressing.
It's meaning that you tuck your compost or your beach peat in around the root area of your plants that are established in your garden. I have a lot of worms in my soil, so I do this in the fall, and then by the spring I go back around, and the worms will work on it through the winter if it's not too cold. Also in the spring, then I will go around with my hands and I'll break up what hasn't broken up, and it just disappears.
And sometimes people compost it, you know, or add it to their compost or something like that. It depends. It should, you don't want to leave it too big, because it can sort of mat down or on the soil around your plants, and then that isn't helping them too much. So you don't want it to get too clumpy, or
waterlogged.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cottonwood leaves, alder leaves are a great additive to add some texture to the soil too.
We're really lucky we have all these things around in our environment that we can just add to our garden easily.
Yes, we are. We drive our to some place or right in our front yard and gather those things up.
Mm-hmm. Kate, did you have any other books you want to mention to us? Did we make it through your list?
The only other thing on my list is Ed Hume, who people will see some of his seed packets in different stores like Sutliff's. He has several books too, and because he is a Washington-based gardener, a lot of his stuff makes sense. One of his basic books is Gardening with Ed Hume, Northwest Gardening Made Easy, and he talks about perennials and annuals, but he also has a good chapter on lawns, and I'm not into lawn maintenance myself, but a lot of people here in Kodiak struggle with that because of our acidic soil, and so his advice might be pertinent to those people.
Great, yeah. Patty, did we make it through all of your books? Is there anything
else?
Yeah,
I think so.
That's great.
I was just going to mention that the community gardens for people who don't have their own lawn or their own garden space, there is some space that is getting to be more developed all the time. It's already been going a couple of years. The community gardens through the Soil and Water Conservation District, I think, is called. They are renting out those spaces. I think there's 24 of them. They're raised beds, and people can use those to grow vegetables or flowers or whatever they like to grow. And hopefully they'll have some water now. The Garden Club did donate some money to help them hook up to the city water so that they won't have to haul their water anymore. That was pretty hard work for the people who were gardeners in the first couple of years. So hopefully that will help. And so if you're discouraged and you say, I don't have a garden spot, you can try that.
Right. I've seen those community gardens. They are right on Larch Street, right at the little U squiggle thing where the dumpsters used to be back in the day. And is it the Soil and Water Conservation Society, you said, that does it?
District, I think. And right. Mm-hmm. Blythe Brown is the person who's the contact for that.
So if you're interested in being a part of the Community Gardens Project, or even if you just want more information on it, you want to reach out to Blythe Brown.
Right. And stay tuned. I'm sure there's going to be publicity about this as it gets closer to planting time.
Sure. And thanks to the Garden Club for making that donation to help them get a water hook up there. I bet that makes it a lot easier for people wanting to be a part of the Community Gardens Project. So if people want to find out more about your Garden Club or maybe get involved, how would they do that?
Right now, we're sort of working on just a few projects, and we haven't been having regular Garden Club meetings. So, but if people are interested, we'd like to find some people who are interested to really take on the reins of what goes on and help us do more. So if you're interested, they could call me. My name, you know, is Patty Holmes, and my number is 486-3074.
All right. So anybody enthusiastic out there about gardening and wanting to be a part of this team, you know who to contact now. Well, I want to say thank you very much for both of you for coming in and interviewing and bringing all these amazing book resources. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Up next on Dog-Eared Reads, I'd like to turn it over to the Kodiak Public Library Director, Katie Baxter, with her lively live chat segment featuring Money Smart Week, in case you need to save some money for all those seeds and starters you now want to put in your garden. Here's Katie.
This is the lively live chat segment for Dog-Eared Reads, and I have in the studio with me Eric Lynchheid, featuring information about April's Money Smart Week, which we're stretching across the month. Money Smart Week is an initiative sponsored by the American Library Association and the Federal Reserve Bank. Both groups have headquarters in Chicago. Money Smart Week is designed to boost financial literacy in communities to help people of any age manage personal finances. Joining me at the library today to promote Money Smarts is Eric Lynchheid. Many of you know Eric as an inspiring teacher and all-around practical, resourceful math wizard. At the library, he is leading our exploratory library lab series called Life Sense for anyone ages 10 to 110 who want to be money smart. I became interested in money smart several years ago as states in the lower 48 suffered deep budget cuts, loss of assistance programs, increased unemployment, the homelessness, increased high school and college dropout rates. Debt is a problem for many Americans. I've learned 1 in 5 Americans have unpaid medical debt. 47% of Americans carry a credit card balance. How is your focus on dollars and cents helping us be smarter about our personal saving and spending?
Thanks, Katie. The way it is helping people become more aware is just to give people skills on how to be financially literate. And how I became really interested in this, there's actually two main things that happened. One is I used to teach health in the high school, health two, and there was a large part of it was how students, seniors and juniors, are going to transition after high school. And so when I was talking to these students, very few of them had ever even talked to their parents about how they were going to finance future education. And so that's whether it was a university or it was a tech school, like a VOTEC in Seward or whatever. They had little to no idea how they were going to fund anything. And so that was one kind of inspiring thing that took place. And then the other one is I have two boys. And the world of pensions is decreasing quickly. And I don't expect either of my boys to have a pension in their life. And so as a parent, it was how can I help my kids at a young age when they start work become not just financially literate, but financially set up so that they are in control of their own well-being as they age and also if they ever want to retire.
Nice. And what I particularly love about our conversation today is the resource is an expert such as yourself. A library often pulls together people from a community to share knowledge, expertise, skills, to motivate people to pursue a topic, learn something about their habits, their lifestyle choices. And this is Money Smart Week here at the library.
It is.
And you know, you happen to pop in and share some interest that you have in teaching people how to be smart with money. And so the library selected you as its first presenter for the new series called Exploratory Library Labs. I'm
know.
Honored. Did you even realize that was happening the day you walked in here?
I just rolled with it.
Yes.
It's all good.
Yes, it's all good. Rolling like a roll of new bright shiny pennies.
There you go.
Yes. So here we are promoting the Library Lab series called Life Sense. And Eric is here today to talk a little bit about what he's doing on Saturdays in April from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. And I just would love to hear your story about what has motivated you to help us be smarter about the way we relate to money.
Sure. Money's a really funny thing. And it's just a thing. But it gives you opportunities to do stuff. What's interesting to me is that people don't really think about money and how it kind of flows into their bank account or how it flows out, or think about like if they want to be able to save money, whether it's a down payment for a house, to buy an iPhone, something that they want, not necessarily a need, but a want, just how to acquire money and then how to keep it. And I have to admit that I feel that my wife is number one in helping me learn a lot of this because she's so darn good with managing money in our household. But the interest to me is that it's a skill like anything else. You can learn the skill, and then you can get rewarded for applying that skill.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's no different than learning to do carpentry or doing automotive repairs or anything else. It's a skill level. And so the first thing is just to be aware. And so I think most of this exploratory thing is just how do you become aware how money works and there's actually seven lessons, which we won't get through all of them, but the first one is like, can I manage my money and my music? And so it's kind of a hands-on visual where you can actually save money and then also spend it on music, but you have to be able to balance the two. So,
nice. And I like what you're sharing because you're reminding me that I've had a couple of money mentors in my life, one of whom is a younger sister who could eke so much out of a dollar when we were mm-hmm. kids, and I just never understood how she did that. Even now in our adulthoods, she continues to be the one that can figure out how to get the most out of the dollar at the grocery store. And I think it's important for us to be skilled in being aware of how others handle money, because
right.
I think we can learn right. from each other.
That's a perfect point. So that part of money is how much you spend. And so that reminds me of, especially new people that come to Kodiak, I always tell them that if you go to Anchorage, go to Costco. And so you can buy a Costco card now for $50. And when I look at my receipts, I figure we pay 60 cents on the dollar going to Costco. So every time we fly to Anchorage, you can have a free Tupperware coming back if you have two baggies. But then you can buy all these groceries, these staples, whether it's coffee for $5.50 on the pound instead of $11. And so you can go through this and go, well, I can spend 60 cents or I can spend a dollar. And so just those little things, saving 60 cents, that's huge.
And I once had a friend who reminded me when I was working in an independent bookstore for probably just about minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And we would all be rushing over to Dunkin' Donuts to get our cup of coffee. And the friend stopped us all and said, how many minutes do you have to work to afford that cup of coffee? And I stopped buying the coffee.
Right.
Because I started to work out a word problem or a story about my hourly wage.
Yes.
So do you make this exploratory lab fun?
Well, I'll come back to what you just said
sure,
about coffee, because
sure.
that always gets me. But the program is visual math.
Okay.
And what's nice about it is that if a student really is not interested in math, it's not a big deal, because it's all running these experiments. And so when you run them, then what happens is you get a graph or a table. So if you like to read graphs and it's easier for you, you can look at the graphs. And if you like to read tables, you can read the tables. But the program runs all the math for you. If you do like math, then I am happy to sit down and go through the algorithms, which are nothing but formulas, math formulas, about how this is working. So it's multi-layered. If you just like the visuals and you want to know something about financial literacy, perfect. If you want to know more math, that's fine too.
Nice.
So it's all visual. The other thing that I like about this program is it's actually called Stella, and it was built by engineers. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually used around the world. The book that we use is called Dollars and Cents, Stay in the Black, Saving and Spending. And it uses Stella, but it's a very comprehensive program, and it's visual, so it isn't just that you see stuff, but you actually start to think about how things work and cause and effect.
And is it enjoyable to get an audience of mixed ages or students of mixed ages? I'm thinking it'd be great fun to have 10-year-olds and 30-somethings and 60-somethings together in the same room going over some of the same information.
I think that would be really helpful because you have different perspectives from different age groups. The other thing that is designed into this, and it's something that we can talk about as a class, is that what are your wants and your needs? And so if you're talking to a fifth grader, which is kind of the starting point for this program, their wants and needs are different than a high schooler, which is different than someone in college, which is different than an adult or someone who's retired. And so as you go through life, your wants and needs change, but that's part of what you can put right into the kind of the program and ask people, what do you want, what do you need, and then try to figure it out on paper, mm-hmm. finances.
Nice. So what were you thinking when I was mentioning hourly wage and the cost of coffee?
All right. So So you can look at some online, but the general rule of thumb I have is that if you were to take a dollar and get 10% interest, you know what, I have to double check this because I wonder if that's off, but it's $17 compounded interest in 30 years. And so when I think about a $5 cup of coffee, and I have to run back and do the math because I might
forgot it. Now it's $5 a
right.
cup.
So it's $5 a cup, 5 times 17 is whatever, $85. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I used to see kids come in with coffee cups and I go, really? Mm. Really? I mean, that's worth $85 and you're going to spend it for coffee. So that's just one of those things where it's your wants and your needs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I want it, but do I really need it? And I actually ran the numbers when I was teaching, and every lunch I used to go and grab a coffee, and I hope I don't make the coffee people mad in town, but but what I did is I added up how much I spent a month. Mm-hmm. And it was like $200, and I go, well, wow, what if I took $200 and I put it into a Roth account for my kids and my kids matched it? And I thought that would be a much better use of spending the money. So that's exactly what I did.
Nice. I think that creative thinking is important, and people have choices to make, and maybe there's a way people can compromise their own wants and
yes.
needs and think, well, my reward will be I'll go treat myself to this much coffee if I'm doing this much for my kids or myself in terms of personal savings. So mm-hmm. I love the story that you're weaving for us about how easy it is to be math smart, money smart. And I invite our listening audience to really take advantage of your knowledge and what you're preparing for these exploratory labs. You're making it so easy to just stop by the library April 8th, April 15th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. and you will be supplying materials, and I know the community will grow in its awareness of financial literacy. So thank you so much today, Eric.
Can I just read a couple of the lessons?
Of
just
course.
So that
I think that's
might,
great.
It might help the audience kind
yes.
of understand it. So there's a total of 7 lessons, and we're not going to get through all of them. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the first is just kind of an introduction. Can I manage my money and my music? And then the next section is kind of extended savings and spending models. And so it's, can I reach a personal saving and spending goal? And most people have that somewhere. And then there's kind of exploratory labs like, can I make money with a lemonade stand? Can I successfully run the local food bank? And can I help a responsible teen buy a car? So those are kind of more things that might be relevant to people. And then for the younger kids, this may not be relevant, but as you get older, it sure does. Lesson 6 and 7 is, how does interest grow my savings? And then the last one is, can compounding interest make me a millionaire? And so that one, that's kind of fun stuff to think about.
Excellent. I think you will have a compounded attendance over time.
That'd be great.
Yes, we'll see how this works.
Sounds
Thanks
great.
So much, Eric.
Yep.
So if our listening audience is curious about money and how to be money smart, attend the library's exploratory lab series, Life Sense, for people who want to know more about money, Saturday, April 15th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Materials are provided. Eric Linscheid will present this exploratory lab, and you will increase your understanding of how money flows into and out of a bank account. Let the library be your place this month where you become money smart. For more information, contact the library main desk at 486-8686. Or go online to city.kodiak.ak.us/library and click on Library Events.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you, Eric. That's very helpful. We should probably all be thinking about attending that workshop and learning how to save our pennies a little bit better or investing in a Roth account. Well, I guess that's it for our show today. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in tonight to Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the Kodiak Public Library Association. Remember, you can find us the second Tuesday of every month on KODK 90.7 at 9 p.m. If you want to find us online, it's www.kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org, and our email is kpla.alaska@gmail.com if you want to reach out to us to become a member, to volunteer with us, or maybe just to give us a book review. Until next month, happy reading.
The world at its base.